broadcasting from the Kill Radio Newsroom in Los Angeles. Here is DJ Shy John with the weekly news from around the world.
And thank you, Brad, for that introduction. Brad is in our sister station, KGIG, in Modesto. Today is Tuesday, January the 21st, 2014. And in the top of the news, I'm going to bring you the Harper's Weekly Review, also dated January 21st, 2014. In a speech at the Department of Justice, President Barack Obama outlined new measures to curtail U.S. government surveillance of the communications of American and foreign citizens. Obama's proposed reforms included shifting custody of the National Security Agency's database of Americans' phone records to an undetermined private sector entity, requiring intelligence officials to obtain a court order for each phone number that they wish to query in the database, and reducing officials' access to phone call data to two hops from a subject rather than three, the records of someone who called someone who called someone who called a suspect. I see. As the nation that developed the Internet, the world expects us to ensure that the digital revolution works as a tool for individual empowerment, not government control, said Obama. It's embarrassing for a head of state like that to go on for almost 45 minutes and say almost nothing, said WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Representative Mike Rogers, Republican, Michigan, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, suggested that former NSA contractor Edward Snowden had been assisted by the Russian government in leaking documents to media. There's a reason he ended up in the hands, the loving arms, said Rogers, of an FSB agent in Moscow. Russian President Vladimir Putin held a press briefing during which he denied allegations of corruption in the country's preparations for the upcoming Winter Olympics in Sochi and responded to criticism of Russia's ban on propaganda relating to non-traditional sexual relations. When they achieve great results, such as, for instance, Elton John, said Putin, millions of our people sincerely love him with no regard to his sexual orientation. At least 30 people were arrested across Nigeria under a new law banning gay marriage and gay groups, and UK Independent Party councillor David Sylvester of Henley-upon-Thames was suspended for publishing a letter in the Henley Standard blaming recent storms and flooding on the government's decision to legalize gay marriage. The scriptures make it abundantly clear that a Christian nation that abandons its faith, Sylvester wrote, will be beset by natural disasters such as storms, disease, pestilence, and war. The Taliban claimed responsibility for an attack that killed 21 people at La Taverna du Liban, a popular restaurant for foreigners in Kabul, where the invaders used to dine, said Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mujahideen, with booze and liquor in the plenty. Protesters accused the Thai government of detonating a grenade that killed one person and wounded 35 at an anti-government demonstration in Bangkok. Let me tell you, brothers and sisters, said protest leader Suthep Thaugsuban, there's no need to suspect anyone else. 2 days later, two more grenades exploded, wounding 28 and destroying a stall selling anti-government t-shirts. 93 wildfires burned in Australia. A Canadian tennis player had a vision of Snoopy before collapsing on court at the Australian Open during a heat wave. And brush fires burned 1,700 acres east of Los Angeles, displacing 11 residents at a Catholic retreat center but leaving statues of Jesus and Mary untouched. A lightning strike damaged the right thumb of the Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro. A month after, another strike damaged its right middle finger. A Salvadorian nun gave birth to a son at the Little Disciples of Jesus Covenant in Campo Morro, Italy. I did not know I was pregnant, she said. I only felt a stomach pain. The star of the MTV reality show Teen Mom, Farrah Abraham, who has created a line of sex toys and appeared in a porn film, announced that she is writing a book on Christian parenting. Divorce rates were found to be higher than average among religiously conservative American Protestants and their neighbors, and the family of televangelist Billy Graham asked the public to pray for his health as he recovered from a lung infection. "We've got some other filming," said his son Franklin, "I'd like my father to do." Yeah. Parents of students at Portsmouth Middle School in Rhode Island received letters from administrators warning that teens who snort Smarties could develop nose maggots. A German farmer captured a runaway bull by spiking a bucket of grain with two bottles of vodka, and a collie named Molly survived a runaway tractor crash in the England town of Colleton. South African biologists reported the capture on film of a tigerfish jumping out of a lake to prey on a swallow in flight, and Japanese fishermen caught a 360-pound giant squid, tearing off its longest tentacles in the process. "I wish," said a fisherman, "we'd been able to make the squid more presentable." An Italian man living in Dublin killed his landlord during a dispute over chess match, then attempted to eat his heart. "He liked a good argument," said a friend of the landlord. A retired Tampa police officer killed a stranger who was texting during previews before the film Lone Survivor. A Providence, New York man was indicted for conspiring to create a radioactive death ray and sell it to the Ku Klux Klan or to Jewish groups so they could eliminate the enemies of Israel. And Craig Cobb pleaded not guilty to 7 terrorism charges stemming from a failed attempt to turn the town of Leith, North Dakota, into a white separatist enclave called Cobbsville. "I warned him," said former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard Tom Metzger, to whom Cobb had given a property, "not to bring in the Hollywood-style Nazis." Good idea. This article penned by Sarah Bressler. I do have a letter to the editor here. They did include, "Dear editors, regarding the tragic death of the Pakistani ninth grade student, Azaz Hazan, who gave his life to prevent a suicide bomber from killing his classmates, I was aghast at the callousness and decadence in the mind of whatever editor was responsible for selecting the comment, 'He was very cute,' from one of the boy's cousins. I realize that the Weekly Review cultivates surrealistic juxtaposition of irrelevant facts, and I'm just as capable as anyone of enjoying that kind of humor. But this goes far beyond that, using humor as a cover for cynical mockery of human grief and heroic self-sacrifice. Sincerely, Joseph Rao." Just saying. And on a little bit more serious note, I have an article here from the news at WBFO.org, WBFO 88.7, NPR News and More, around the nation. Monday, January 20th, mentally ill are often locked up in jails that can't help. This was written by Laura Sullivan. Cook County, Illinois, Sheriff Tom Dart walks the halls of his jail every day. With 10,000 inmates, this place is a small city, except a third of the people here are mentally ill. Dart has created some of the most innovative programs in the country to handle mentally ill inmates, hiring doctors and psychologists and training staff. But if you ask anyone here, even this jail is barely managing. "I can't conceive of anything more ridiculously stupid by government than to do what we're doing right now," Dart says. 50 years ago, states began shutting down asylums in favor of community mental health centers. It was a major policy shift in mental health, allowing patients to go home and live independently. Over the past decade, though, states have cut billions from their mental health budgets, shuttering clinics across the country. The result is thousands of mentally ill people funneling in and out of the nation's jails. In many cases, it has sent the mentally ill right back where they started, locked up in facilities that are ill-equipped to help them. You can see the problem every morning in the intake center in Cook County, where 250 new inmates arrested overnight are stuffed into bullpens. It's staggering. Ellie Petek Montgomery is the Deputy Director of Mental Health Policy for the Sheriff's Office. She and her staff screen all of the inmates for mental illness. It's not the hostile, angry men at the front of the cages bickering with jail staff and pushing each other for more elbow room that interest her. It's the men in the corners, men who come to jail and manage, despite the noise and commotion, to fall asleep. "I'm kind of curious about this guy in the blue," says Montgomery, pointing to a man sitting quietly on a bench. "Now, is he dazed because he's on drugs, or because the voices in his head are louder than what's happening around him?" On this morning, one inmate after another has a problem. One man tells her he's going to kill himself because he thinks he's already dead. Another guy explains that the voices tell him to hurt people. "To walk in and feel like every other person I'm interviewing is mentally ill on any given day, I can't wrap my brain around it," she says. "It's staggering what we're really dealing with." Most of these men are here on minor offenses. People have picked them up for small crimes like acting out in front of restaurants, sleeping in abandoned buildings, or possessing drugs. They're people with nowhere to go and nowhere to get medication. Some of them will stay for a few days, some for a few weeks, but statistically, almost all of them will be back. While these men are here, the jail's responsibility is to keep other inmates from hurting them and them from hurting themselves. But jail staff say what really happens deep inside this jail is a far cry from actual treatment. Inside the women's psych ward, a place rarely seen by the public, a long, sterile hallway with a row of green doors leads to a community area where 20 women are sitting in chairs. Some are rocking. Some are pulling out their hair. Many are staring into space. You see people who are so profoundly ill that you understand that this is not the place for them, says Dr. Nenka Jones-Tapia, head of mental health for the jail. But here and throughout much of the country, there's nowhere else for them to go. City and state governments nationwide have cut funding for mental health services. In the face of budget shortfalls, Chicago officials closed six of the area's 12 mental health clinics in the past 3 years. Illinois officials closed three of the area's state hospitals. Private clinics are also struggling for funding. Without medication or counseling, these inmates wind up in front of police. They're brought here to this ward, which resembles something from the past. The jail's chief psychologist, Kenya Key, steps inside a small dark room behind the community area. It has padded walls, a drain, and a light. Nothing else. It's called the quiet room. "It's never used as punishment," Key explains. "The purpose of it is to decrease stimulation. There's nothing to write with in this room, but the walls are covered in writing. Slurs written with blood from fingertips or scratched into the walls with fingernails. The majority of the patients who are put here are in a state of very high agitation and escalation," Key says. "While we do have those patients that will ask, 'Can I go to the quiet room?' with the majority of patients, it's a forced intervention to help the patient de-escalate." In the men's psych ward down the hall, the scene is familiar. Some men are locked into rooms where they pace back and forth for hours in smocks. One man is wearing just a blanket. One man has been tied down in an empty room during the night with leather straps. Full leather restraints are used when a patient does not respond to any other intervention, Key says, which means they are literally restrained to the bed. Officials acknowledge that what's happening in these wards is reminiscent of the mental asylums of the last century, but they say the only other option is to lock the mentally ill in solitary confinement for weeks on end. This is, after all, a jail. And this is one of the few in the country with doctors and nurses, psychologists and correctional officers trained in how to handle psychotic episodes. And there are rules. Inmates can only be forcibly medicated with a doctor's orders. Leather restraints in padded rooms have time limits. Still, Sheriff Dart says he's confused by the compliments he hears from other jail administrators. On the one hand, they're speaking so highly about what you're doing, he says, but it's depressing as hell when they tell you you're the leader. I feel as if we're doing the bare minimum, and we're the leaders? No, this is not good. The confusion about what is supposed to be happening in this jail is apparent when correctional officers talk. They often switch between calling the men inmates and patients in the same sentence. Once inmates are willing to eat, shower, dress, and sit calmly, they move from the psych ward to Division 2, just across the road. In one room of that facility, a group of inmates is standing by the television, while 40 or so others mill about a row of bunks. Three of them say they came to the county jail to get back on their medication after their local clinic closed. Sometimes I would even commit a crime just to make sure I would get my meds, says inmate Joseph DeRigi. Here there's a little more understanding because they know us. Okay, DeRigi, we know what you're on. You're good. That's just the way it is. But jail is an expensive place to get medication. It costs almost $200 a night to house a mentally ill person here. Health clinics cost a fraction of that. Yeah, but how effective are they? Plus, their cases clog the courts with largely minor offenses. That lengthens jail time for everyone. The average stay is now 8 days longer than it was a few years ago. Adding 8 days costs county taxpayers $10 million more every year. As Dart makes his way through Division 2, he pauses to say hello to many of the inmates he recognizes. They cycle in and out. Dart stops at the bunks. His frustration is palpable. Here you have a population clearly identified as mentally ill, and you're releasing them to the street with nothing, he says. This isn't left or right, conservative or liberal talking. What do you think is going to happen? Same thing happens here in Los Angeles. Dart is a former prosecutor. He wants criminals punished, but he says he had no idea when he took the job of sheriff that he would also become the state's mental health provider. While he's talking, a man in the back of the room starts walking in circles. He's saying he's God and that he's going to make everyone disappear. Now the other mentally ill inmates around him are getting agitated. Three officers with mental health training slowly surround him. They don't say anything. They just nod their heads, agreeing with him. On cue, the officers start walking, and the inmate instinctively starts walking with them. He doesn't know it, but he's headed back to the psych ward. Dart barely pauses. He sees it every day. He says he understands that money for community health centers is tight, but he says doing it this way is costing more. Clearly, our society had determined that the state-run mental hospitals were abhorrent, that, my God, our society cannot tolerate this. We're much more advanced than that, Dart says. I just find the irony so thick that the same society finds it okay to put the same people in jails and prisons. But then he shakes his head and changes his mind. I know people care, he says, pausing. I don't think they know. And that's about all I have for the news today. Please be good to each other in the coming week, people. And stay out of the news.